Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, North Korea appears to test fire another missile. A coalition opposed to the Islamic State says the group is losing ground. China may be considering new island construction beyond the Spratly Islands. And researchers find music may help infants learn language and speech.
We engage the babies through movement, so like tapping their feet and bouncing them and helping them shake maracas and all that.
It's right here on The Voice of America. North Korea has apparently test-fired an intermediate-range missile. Our correspondent in Seoul, Brian Patton, joins us now on the line. Welcome from Seoul, Brian.
Thank you.
What happened here?
South Korean Defense Ministry today reported that the North conducted another test of a medium-range ballistic missile, similar to one that it tested earlier this month. And like the missile test that occurred earlier this month, this test, too, failed. It supposedly exploded or there was some malfunction shortly after it was fired.
Other nations have been very critical of what North Korea is doing with this series of tests.
Yes. The international community is quite united in opposing North Korea's efforts to acquire advanced nuclear weapons capability. Since January, after North Korea conducted its fifth nuclear test, as we all know, the United Nations imposed tough new sanctions on the Kim Jong-un government, and those sanctions could get even stronger or more strongly enforced or more sanctions approved if North Korea continues with these types of provocations, and most specifically, if it conducts a fifth nuclear test, which South Korean authorities say it is the North is prepared to do any day now.
This comes right before a high-profile party meeting next week in Pyongyang. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, and this is part of the motivation we understand for all of these activities recently is kind of to enhance the image of the young Kim Jong-un, the young leader of North Korea, in advance of this rare party Congress meeting, the first time in 36 years that such a meeting is going to occur. Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, did not think highly of these official congresses and functions, and he did not have them during his time. So it is a change of legislative structure that Kim Jong-un wants to rebuild the party apparatus, wants to be seen as a head, wants to have that stature as head of the party in this conference to legitimize perhaps his own rule.
So do we think at the Congress party that they will endorse this leader?
For sure. For sure. I'm sure he'll get 100% endorsement. There's not a lot of drama or intrigue about the Congress coming up. It will be a rubber stamp on his leadership for sure. What we are standing by to learn is that he will likely speak at this conference. We want to hear what he has to say. Again, his father, Kim Jong-il, was very rarely spoke in public. And so his son, Kim Jong-un, does on occasion make speeches. And so we'll be listening to see how exactly he responds to the sanctions in this speech, how he responds to the international community's calling for North Korea to give up its nuclear arsenal and come back to the bargaining table to talk about security assurances and economic aid in response for giving up those nuclear weapons.
Well, thank you very much, Brian, for speaking with us from Seoul.
No, thank you, Susan.
Joining us here in the studio with more on this particular story is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be with you.
Thank you, thank you. So what are they saying?
Well, there are a lot of jokes at North Korea's expense about this missile launch failure, some of which are can't be repeated on air, but some of them are also talking about, you know, joking about the state of North Korea, saying, well, maybe they should focus on electricity and plumbing before they focus on these missile launches. There was one photo I saw where Kim Jong-un had his hand up kind of above his head and said, the missile went this high, you know, kind of like a child would say. So there's a lot of back and forth about that, a lot of jokes, like I said, and then some serious tones to these jokes, people making jokes saying, well, I guess some scientists are going to get executed, and people saying, actually, they probably will. Some people might actually face some punishments because of this missile failure. So some serious tones to that. The other big story we're looking at on social media is Ted Cruz picking Carly Fiorina.
Yeah, that was an interesting move he decided to take.
It is. I think it's the first time ever that a candidate during the primaries has said, I'm picking this person as my vice presidential nominee if I get the nomination. Cruz supporters saying it's a great move. It's going to mix up the campaign. It's a new attack dog for Cruz. Donald Trump saying it's too late in the game. It doesn't matter. And his supporters saying it really doesn't matter at this point. Questions, too, about is she popular enough that she can help him in some of the upcoming states. Indiana, there are a lot of eyes on the state of Indiana for their primary coming up, wondering if she can go out and help boost Ted Cruz there. And the one moment getting a lot of social media attention, Carly Fiorina likes to sing these little songs.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's when she was campaigning for president herself, she talked about how she sings songs to her dogs. And so she sang this song during her speech to Ted Cruz's daughters. And for Cruz supporters, they said it was a really endearing moment and humanizing moment. For Ted Cruz's opponents and the detractors, they said it was kind of creepy. So depends on how you look at it, but she's bringing her song to the campaign.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of researchers has found that several nutritional supplements can enhance the effectiveness of antidepressant medications. Researchers from Australia's University of Melbourne and Harvard University say supplements such as omega-3 fish oils, vitamin D, and methylfolate were found to boost the effects of medications prescribed to treat those with clinical depression. The team's findings are based on an analysis of 40 worldwide clinical trials, along with a meticulous evaluation of evidence for treating severe depressive disorders with a combination of antidepressant medications and nutritional supplements. The Australian-American group, who outlined their findings in the American Journal of Psychiatry, say their research did not reveal any serious safety concerns from combining antidepressants with the supplements. But they did caution that patients should consult with their healthcare provider before doing so. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
A coalition opposed to the Islamic State says the militant group is on the defensive and losing ground. That is the assessment of the small group of the Global Coalition to Counter ISIL, an acronym for Islamic State. Among participants at the meeting in Kuwait was Special U.S. Envoy Brett McKirk, who said coalition airstrikes are drying up IS resources, including oil production. White House spokesman Josh Ernst says the IS group has been driven out of 40% of the territory it once controlled in Iraq and about 16% in Syria. Max Abrams, an assistant professor at Northeastern University in Boston, who has studied and written about the Islamic State, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, by almost all measurements, the IS group has been weakened.
The air campaign has been successful, at least in terms of taking out a large number of the leaders. There have been a number of operational successes against oil infrastructure and oil assets. And so the revenues of Islamic State are down. And that's a very important metric because all organizations need money to thrive. Furthermore, the air campaign has literally, physically blown up a large amount of money, hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's really irreplaceable for the group. We're learning that desertions from the group are way up. You see a greater difficulty, I would say, by the leadership of keeping its population and its members in line. So we're seeing a release of propaganda videos where the targets aren't turncoats, spies within the organization. The salaries that are being paid to the fighters has gone down. Taxes have gone way up. And so all of these signs point to one thing, and that is that in the group's stronghold of Iraq and in Syria, ISIS as an organization is becoming weaker.
They indicate that this will take a very long time. What will victory look like?
It won't be clean. ISIS certainly will not end in that fashion. I think that it will undergo a number of different iterations. and it won't really be clear whether we're dealing with the same organization.
The Islamic State is not necessarily the face of terrorism. There are other groups worldwide that we have to contend with, so obviously the war on terror will go on.
There's no question about it. I mean, I've said from the very beginning, since Islamic State split with Al-Qaeda, that the future of Syria will probably look more like the Al-Qaeda affiliate there, Nusra, rather than Islamic State. And the reason is, again, is because Nusra is slightly more moderate than Islamic State. And so for that reason, it is more local support. So it's better able to draw recruits locally. Furthermore, Islamic State has very, very little state backing because it's such a pariah group, whereas slightly more moderate groups like Ahrar al-Sham and Nusra in Syria, they actually do get backing from countries like Turkey and the Saudi Gulf countries. And so for that reason, they pose the long-term threat even after we get rid of ISIS.
Coming up on International Edition, possible new Chinese island construction and music leading the way to speech. U.S. lawmakers are calling on the Obama administration to conduct more frequent freedom of navigation operations close to artificial islands developed by China in the disputed waters of the South China Sea. The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker of Tennessee, expressed his view Wednesday ahead of testimony by Deputy U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Neither the rhetoric nor the freedom of navigation operations have deterred or slowed down China's land reclamation activities, including the stationing of military-related assets on these artificial islands. Moreover, many experts assess it is increasingly likely that Beijing will declare an air defense identification zone in the South China Sea. And China could undertake further destabilizing actions if the International Tribunal ruling, as expected, goes against Chinese interest. As I've said previously, I fully appreciate the complexity of the U.S.-China relationship and the need for constructive engagement on a number of issues important to both Washington and Beijing, but merely managing differences with China is not a successful formula, particularly when such management cedes U.S. influence and places American interest at risk in the Indo-Pacific and beyond.
Blinken said the number of so-called freedom of navigation operations carried out by the U.S. military in the South China Sea has increased in recent years, and they will continue. Recent news reports, notably in the Washington Post and Wall Street Journal, say China may be considering new island construction beyond the Spratly Islands. They say U.S. Pacific Command has sent warplanes close to Scarborough Shoal, west of the Philippines, where China is believed to have conducted survey work. Those flights brought a sharp response from Beijing. Ankit Panda is associate editor of the Asia-Pacific Current Affairs publication, The Diplomat. He says he is not an alarmist when it comes to the Scarborough Shoal, which China calls Yangyang Island.
The biggest reason is that the features in the Spratly Islands that China has turned into artificial islands over the past few years were previously occupied by Beijing since at least the 1980s. Scarborough Shoal is very different. It was previously administered by the Philippines and was coercively seized. It wasn't a previously held Chinese feature, so staging any reclamation activities there, for example, would be incredibly provocative. And, you know, I would also add the context here is that case that's pending at The Hague at the Permanent Court of Arbitration between the Philippines and China is expected to reach a verdict in early June. And when that verdict comes around, most analysts, myself included, expect that to go against China and in the Philippines' favor. And essentially, Beijing will face some reputational costs. Its actions in the South China Sea will have essentially been deemed out of sync with international law by an international court. So it seems unlikely to me that they would choose to go forward with reclamation of Scarborough Shoal, but China doesn't show any signs immediately of at least stopping its activities.
Will freedom of navigation operations become more routine?
They should. I understand the administration's policy. It should happen. But obviously, as we just saw in April, the operation was canceled. And this actually gets at an important point that I haven't discussed yet, which is that we've been hearing about some tension between the White House and the Pentagon about the Freedom of Navigation program. And it essentially comes down to this. The Obama administration is concerned about the broader U.S.-China bilateral relationship, in which the South China Sea is but one slice of the pie. There's an incredibly important economic relationship there. There are cyber issues. There's the North Korea issue. There's the East China Sea. There's global governance issues where the United States and China cooperate. Obviously, the Obama administration is sensitive to the amount of political capital it is expending in the South China Sea, because every freedom of navigation operation draws a negative reaction from China. And so it needs to be careful, essentially, not to cause too many tensions in the bilateral relationship. But obviously, the Defense Department and the Pentagon are less concerned about that and are more concerned with using the U.S. Navy's might to essentially assert freedom of navigation there. And, you know, Scarborough Shoal's location does make it particularly interesting from a strategic point of view. If China were to build an artificial island there, it could install over-the-horizon radars, for example, that would give it very early notification of any U.S. and Philippines activities occurring at Subic Bay, which is a major former U.S. naval base that has currently been reactivated under this new agreement between the two countries.
Ankit Panda, associate editor of the Asia-Pacific Current Affairs publication, The Diplomat. The Wall Street Journal quotes Nanjing University security analyst Zhu Feng as saying he could not rule out Chinese construction of a lighthouse or a maritime monitoring post on Scarborough Shoal, but sizable land reclamation would be, he said, out of the question. This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new is this increasing popularity of what is known as cosplay. Originating in Japan, cosplay involves people dressing up and acting like their favorite characters from films, comics, anime, and anywhere else superheroes tend to roam. It's some serious role playing. Su Miat No is a cosplayer.
We get to be our favorite character for one day. We get to act like them.
The 8th annual Myanmar Cosplay and Otaku Festival was held last week in Yangon, Burma. More than 200 cosplayers and about 1,000 fans swarmed the event that has seen its attendance increase tenfold over the past 3 years. But not everyone in Myanmar is a fan of cosplay. Ling Ong Chaw is one of the event organizers.
The media, they comment very bad. Or like that, we destroy the Myanmar culture. So it's not a culture destroyer, it's just a hobby and realization for the young people.
For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossan.
Music may help infants learn language and speech. Researchers at the University of Washington's Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences used music like waltz and the some old American favorites like Take Me Out to the Ball Game to find out more. VOA's Lori London spoke with Christina Chow, lead author of the study, and asked how they went about getting inside the minds of babies.
Basically, have these nine-month-old babies come into the lab, and they were randomly assigned to either participate in this music group or they will be in the control group. So for the music group babies, the idea is that they came into the lab for 12 sessions of music play sessions. Each session was 15 minutes long. And in groups of two or three babies, we have them play with parents, and there's an experimenter guiding the parents who will help the babies through a set of activities to learn a particular music rhythm. So we help them learn the, we call the triple meter rhythm. So think of waltz in three. And it's a fairly difficult rhythm for babies at this age to process. That's why we picked it. And the idea is that we engage the babies through movements, so like tapping their feet and bouncing them and helping them shake maracas and all that. On the other hand, the control babies came to the lab for the same amount of sessions, and instead they were just playing freely with toys and blocks. So after this whole play session period, that was about a month, and then we tested both groups of babies in how their brain process rhythmic information in both music and speech.
What did you find out?
We found that the babies in the music group had stronger brain responses to these disruptions in both music and speech rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
in the auditory and prefrontal regions of the brain compared to babies in the control group. And so we think that participation in these play sessions with music improved these babies' ability to extract and detect patterns in sound. And this is a skill that's important both for processing music and speech rhythm.
Just to wrap this up, how is this a unique study?
It's unique in several ways. This is, I would say, the first that we know to have observed this crossover effect from music to speech at the earliest, as early as in infancy, 9 months of age. Kind of talking from another perspective, in infant learning speech sound, and this is also the first time we're showing that having experience other than language experience in infancy can also help babies learn speech sounds.
Christina Chow with the University of Washington's Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences. We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Russian Ministry of Justice has suspended the activities of the Mezhlis of the Crimean Tatar people, an institution registered with the Ukrainian government and operating in Ukrainian territory, putting it on the Russian government's list of extremist organizations. The Mezhlis has long been a representative body for the Crimean Tatar population. It has also served as an important independent voice in preserving their culture and protecting them from discrimination. State Department spokesperson John Kirby called on Russia to reverse the Ministry of Justice's recent decision to designate the Crimean Tatar Mezhlis as an extremist organization, and the decision by de facto authorities in Crimea to suspend this democratic institution. This move against the Mezhlis is the latest in a series of abuses perpetrated by the de facto authorities against those in Crimea who oppose the Russian occupation and attempted annexation, including Crimean Tatars and the members of other ethnic and religious minorities in Crimea. According to the latest State Department human rights report, over the past year, Russian security services engaged in an extensive campaign of intimidation to suppress dissent and opposition to the occupation that employed kidnappings, disappearances, physical abuse, and deportations in Crimea. More broadly, Russian authorities engaged in a widespread campaign to suppress free speech and media in Crimea. They refused to register Crimean media and news organizations, preventing them from operating legally. Security services also detained and abused journalists and threatened them with prosecution for opposing the occupation. On April 19th, Russian authorities detained several journalists in Crimea and raided five offices of media outlets on the peninsula. One journalist, Mykola Semina, was detained for allegedly speaking out against Russia's occupation. This is the latest in a pattern of attempts to muzzle free speech in Crimea. The United States condemns the ongoing abuses in Crimea and again calls on Russia to end its occupation of Crimea. Sanctions related to Crimea will remain in place until Russia ends its occupation and returns the peninsula to Ukraine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.